Like, they give you a little money. What would you like the natives to do with it? So I said, I've been in Klamath Falls, Oregon, and they had a good timber at Klamath Falls. And they sold certain part of their timber. You got about $40,000, the children's and every one of them. And they went to town. They bought good cars, and that happened among the white people too. That always happened among us poor people, you know, where whenever we get little money, we like to get something good for our home or things like that. So that's nothing new. Pretty soon they got more money. Then they sold some more timber. With that, they started corporations, they started business with that, and they done well. So I said about the money, I said, including me, I don't know how to handle money. I never did have money outside of it. I've been a laborer all my life. I never had no money. If I get a lot of money, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I might, and including a lot of natives that hang around, do nothing but drinking, they would kill themselves. But hardly, not many natives would be left with that kind of money. The money that they got, if it was divided. So I was thinking at that time, and since 1915, my father was at that meeting at the Fairbanks, the first land claim meeting. He didn't turn down the reservations. The only thing he said was that as natives live on a big tract of land, we've got to have quite a lot of land to live on. We're going to trap and hunt and gather games and fish. And if we get, every village get a little small reservation, you could make a living on that. And about the land, they told me about the land again, they might give you a little land. The Congress might, and again the Secretary of Interior might say you don't own land, he's a boss. He owns all the land, the United States owns all the land, it's supposed to be. So, I said, with the help of the lawyers, we got lawyers still got interested in it. Barry Jackson, Tom somebody, you remember that? Tom Fenton. Well, Tom was a pretty good, he knew the Indian land, the laws on Indian land. So I said, if they get land, they can't pay no tax on it, unless they go to sell timber, start a mine or something. And it wouldn't be on for all the land. It'll be have to be as little, wherever they start some business, like cutting timber and things like that. We did talk about it. Now, our work, it was all put down. I really don't know whether that went to Congress or not. Maybe Mr. Wright would tell you about that. Or Al, I don't know where he's at. I'd never been to Washington or not in any place, you know, in my life, outside of in some towns. I don't know whether that was ever, that should be included, the record of that should be included. And that's all I have to say. I thank Mr. Berger, taking so much interest in that. I really think myself that the governments of the United States and Canada and the rest of the world should remember who they took the land from. And that should be, from now on, certain amount of things that the us natives don't get. I've been talking about employment, and I still do for the natives, which never I write to this legislature, so they write me back that certain percentage of the state money, that state spent money on all the federal, certain percentage should have some native hire in there. That's our biggest problem today, is the young people without work. So I thank you for talking to you. And I was wishing that this place would be quite a lot of natives, and I don't see not too many of them. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. There's some people standing at the back. I think you can find some seats here if you wish. Please feel free to take any that are vacant. I wondered, Mr. Tiolana, if you wanted to add anything at this point.
I'm going to say a little bit about the impact to our Native people. Because soon after we have a meeting at Barrow in November 1962, when we get into Fairbanks, we all afraid what the urban people are going to say to us. And then when I went home to Nome, the first impact I feel from my own Native people, they say, why don't they send me? I'm smarter than you are. And I couldn't say nothing, because I don't have that kind of experience in 1962 about the policy of that going to infect us by Alaska land claim settlement. Those are the impact that first experience I had, right after 3 days, we have first meeting at Barrow. The problems pop out since after 1971 to me. Some of them were real sad to me. What I also want to say about the impact of our Native people have been well said by Lily McCarvey, because first year, I would say, we could feel the impact within the AFN, the lot of differences among our Native people. I think they are doing a tremendous job for us, because we should learn also from our differences. We could look back what our arguments is all about. I think the land claim settlement act works and does strange things for us also. because right after the land claim settlement, there are a lot of natives pop out from everywhere because I want to be, I am native too, which we don't know before, because the money, I think, is influenced our native people. I think we should also address more to really sovereignty, the power they should exercise in their own village. Because the written policy from Washington, D.C. never works for us. Because also when I was born, we don't have no jail, we don't have no state trooper, we don't have no divorces, we don't have no child abuse, we don't have no alcohol problem. That means we have something to cure our problem today within the power of village sovereignty. Because we have those policy from our ancestors, which still apply for us today. Also, I have a very bad experience because about our land claim settlement. I was in Seward one time, and the native told me that he gonna lose his mining claim because of this land claim settlement. What he said is not very good. He said that when they have a land claim settlement, they should send all the natives to Russia because it's not belong here. And I was so mad, and I asked him, who been here first? My ancestors or your ancestors? According to your court of law, you're not supposed to buy anybody's land. It doesn't belong to you. Then I left him. Also, we could feel the impact in our village corporations. They try to do things that they don't understand, the policy, the money-making policy, or young people. I couldn't help them because in my village, I don't have that kind of experience to lead them in the corporation procedures. But also we said to ourselves a lot of time we should keep our cultural values. Like I said, we don't have those problems before because our culture tells us not to do things. I think what I earned from my AFN apply itself. What I try to keep our culture values, because when somebody kill an animal, we sacrifice that animal to unify our village people. They boost our spirit up and work better among our native people. Those are the things that we are beginning to forget. We should add it to our corporate procedures. To me, our cultural values is more valuable than anything in the world. Because if we lose them, we're not going to buy back with all the money in the world. Because those cultural values still apply to our business. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tuilana. Francis Degnan, would you like to?
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here and seeing old friends, and I'm glad that this discussion has begun, because I think in a lot of people's minds, we're all wondering, you know, just where we're going, although individually, each one of us knows what we want and what we're going to do. But as far as what Alaska, the ANSCA has done, is forced us to stay in a mode where we have to work together in order to succeed. And if we pull at different angles and never come to an agreement, that we're bound to fail. But failure is something that the Alaska Natives have not had in terms of getting along together, because we've survived throughout the centuries. That's according to what my ancestors have passed down to me. We didn't have written histories. Everything was passed down verbally. My father would be very proud to be here and see what has transpired, but he passed away three years ago. And from being his child, I've understood what his philosophy and what he intended to do as far as the Native Claim Settlement Act is. So I'll just briefly, for the record, would like to just state how the Unalakleet area's involvement as far as ANSCO is concerned. Well, in speaking with the elders, to get from my own perspective, I found out that we as Eskimos have always had councils. They weren't formalized until in our village until 1927. And in 1934, Unalakleet became an IRA council, the Native Village of Unalakleet, and since 1939 has pursued to improve the conditions in the Native Village. So in the meantime, during the councils, the people looked toward their leadership. They elected their council people, and they looked toward them to do the guidance in the community and to protect what was rightfully theirs. Our Native people respected one another. They respected boundaries. Our next door neighbor is an Athabascan village, the Kaltag. The people traversed freely. Our other villages of Stebbins, St. Michael, Shaktalik, and Unalakleet and Koyuk banded together and in 1951 filed a 9 million acre claim through the Indian Claims Commission to their lands, what they considered was theirs. They followed the traditional boundaries, respecting the surrounding communities. And I have a feeling by my living in the village that the feeling is still there of respect. Now we have definite boundaries. There are lines drawn by surveyors. We have patent to our land. Now, we have always understood that was our land. Now, we have propaganda about 1991. It's built into ANSCA, and I think that frightens our people, frightens me, because like one elder told me, he says, you know, we're being treated like tomcats. Well, as an Eskimo, I'm familiar with tomcats. They come in with the tide. They go out with the tide. He says, that's how I feel as an elder. We're being treated by our state government and also by our federal government, because 1991 is being talked about. Does that mean that we don't really own the land that we say that we have and we have patent to? In our area, we've had 100 years now where the federal government has issued patent to non-natives. Has anyone tried to take that patent away or erode those rights? Certainly not the natives. But that is the basic intent, or had been the basic intent of the people in our area, was to preserve their right to pass on to their children, to their great-grandchildren, because their ancestry had preserved and stayed there. That was their land. It is still recognized as being the Inuit land in our area. You're free to come, you're free to go through. You're never molested. It has always been the Eskimo tradition, and I believe the Native tradition, is that we welcome people through, but at the same time, there's a respect. And I certainly feel that we need to define in our own minds as to how best we can make our corporations work, or if that is a vehicle that probably needs to be changed, just like anything, we can go for those changes. But as I see it, as a shareholder, I have certain number of shares, and I only have a certain say-so. But yet, we have our annual meetings, and the people decide what they want, and so we work together to best shape our destiny. And Mr. Tilana spoke about 1962 up in Barrow. Unalakleet and the surrounding areas were involved with that and did establish the beginning for our area's involvement as far as land claims. And I'll probably add more later, but that's what I'd like to put in. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've been around the table. Might I suggest now that we perhaps go around again, Mr. Borbridge, that brings us back to you, perhaps you might address some of the questions that we wrote out, or some of the comments that others made, or anything else that you think should be raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Might be appropriate to look at the suggested questions for discussion, because I think basic to the discussions we've had and the testimony or comments that we've heard are the proposed five main goals by Mrs. Reardon as she had extracted them in her perusal of the 1968 and 69 hearings. I note that questionee is in bold print. Has Anne left anything out? I'll leave that for the last. I think in terms of continuity and use and occupancy of the land, I think a lot of us considered ANCSA as the starting point, that it was an opportunity. We were faced with a series of crises, and that the primary one was selections by the state of Alaska, which costs the natives millions of acres of valuable lands that actually should never have been selected and never have been taken from the native people. It was a failure of the Congress to live up to the promise first enunciated in the Act of 1884 and later repeated in the Statehood Act that caused those losses. So, in terms, again, of continuity and use and occupancy of the lands, I think the pressures are always going to continue, but I think that ANCSA met the big crisis and managed to pass on to those who came after, as is the way we look at it from our cultural viewpoint, the opportunity to continue to refine the methods that we had developed in the Claims Settlement Act to protect the use and occupancy. My comment on the importance of cash compensation for economic development is this, that for those of us who were concerned about the development of the fullest legal and historic dignity as the basis for our land claims, we saw our claims in the light of a very complete and historic array of Supreme Court decisions and an overlay of statutes, and legislative acts, and treaties in which the full development of the concept of Aboriginal or Indian title had developed. So many of us saw the cash compensation as a right that we had. It was an expression, an acknowledgement by the federal government that there was a fully legal, strong claim that we translated into land rights, which, as it occurred in ANCSA, the two-edged sword did two things. The rights of the Alaska Natives to 44 million acres was recognized and confirmed. Again, I stress, no land was given to the Natives. Secondly, the claims we had asserted to the remaining acreage in the state of Alaska was extinguished by the Claims Settlement Act, and for this, we were compensated. Thus, I think here the main point has been missed. The importance of the cash compensation was its acknowledgement of our Indian or Aboriginal title, for which we had a right of compensation. Now, in terms of the resolution of past social ills and full participation in the future, again, I think ANCSA was an important milestone and helped to give us the tools to become more effectively and fully involved in shaping our participation in the future. I don't think any of us ever anticipated ANCSA would be the complete answer. No complete answer is possible in any one piece of legislation or even in several collective pieces of legislation. In terms of the achievement of self-sufficiency and self-determination, again, I felt that ANCSA had provided the tools through title to land and through compensation and other opportunities incident to that transfer of title to lands and the reception of the funds. I think there's no question, and no one has ever doubted this, whether they have worked inside of the corporations or outside of the corporations, and that is the corporations must continue to improve their methodology. They must continue to improve the way in which they relate to shareholders. And above all, there must not be a feeling that we want to avoid open, vigorous debate. I cannot recall any greater, more involved, lively, tough, all-out debates than we had when we worked together as a group and shaped the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Now, if that's what it took to bring about a settlement act, then that is also what is going to take from this perspective in 1984 to make the Settlement Act work. Now, in terms of continuity and cultural integrity, as I mentioned, I feel that the opportunity to maintain cultural integrity has improved a great deal. That's a very general comment because I want to address the last. Has anything been left out? I think perhaps the perspective and how we look at what was being said caused something to be left out, in my opinion. I think paramount, when you look at look at the 68 and 69 hearings and those of us here recall talking to many of the people in the villages. Because remember, although Aboriginal or Indian title is a legal concept with a fully developed dignified history which came up through the dealings of the federal government with the Indian tribes all the way up to Alaska, and which history incidentally antedated the formation of the United States as a nation, there is one overpowering consideration. Paramount in our considerations, as expressed during those hearings, was the overpowering and the basic sense of our existence as Alaska Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts. I think if you were to ask us here, getting away from all the technical language, and if you were to dig right down into us as individuals and ask us, what is the one thing we would like to have for ourselves, for our people? What do we hear them saying now? What did we hear them saying then? We want to continue to have the right and to enjoy the right to continue to be Alaska Natives, to be Alaska Indians, to be Alaska Eskimos, to be Aleuts. We want to now, as we did then, to continue to maintain our tribal identity. More than cultural identity, we were concerned about tribal identity. AFN was the milestone in which we, instead of submerging tribal identities as Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts, we raised them to a higher plateau. And we expressed our love toward one another and said, we will act as Alaska Natives. Sovereignty, I firmly believe, is an outgrowth of this powerful aspiration, the retention of tribal identity. In my opinion, too much technically has been made of what does sovereignty mean. I heard Paul and others go to the heart of it. It is the power to act as a tribe, the power that comes from being a tribe. I think all of these things together add that one item that I feel has been left out, that I feel can be better expressed, that cultural identity and the desire to maintain cultural integrity is another way of saying we want always to enjoy the right, that ageless, ancient right, to be Alaska Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts. And if we look at ANCSA in its broadest sense, this is what I see ANCSA as having tried to accomplish, this one objective. In order to achieve the objective, we became involved, those of us here and others, including some wonderful people who have passed on, we came involved in some very technical, detailed discussions. Well, let me assure you, the technicalities and the complications were a reflection of the fact that Congress didn't fully understand us as a people. And so they tried to deal through these institutions with what they perceived to be the kind of a settlement that we needed. And this is what I heard the elders say then in 1968 and 69, and it's what I hear them saying today, very loudly and very clearly. And I'll say no more about sovereignty until a later time. But again, sovereignty is an outgrowth of that aspiration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Wright, would you like to make a further contribution at this stage, or?
Yes, as a matter of fact, listening to the testimony and remembering that I participated in most of the hearings that were held by the Congress, as well as most of the hearings and meetings that were held by the Native people, during this time. Kind of a condensed version of what the people on the Native side wanted was contained in a statement that I made at the White House press conference to President Nixon on an occasion that I met with him when he overturned his Secretary of Interior position on land claims and was the first to come out with a bill anywhere near the requested bill of the Alaskan Native people. And I'd like to read it and put it into the record because I'm not sure that it's been distributed widely. And this was on April the 6th in 1971. For the past several months, I and other representatives of the Alaska Federation of Natives have been working closely with the administration to assist them in formulating their position on the Alaska Native land claims. I have met today with the President to discuss the progress of these negotiations and to give him my views with respect to the administration's position on this important national issue. I told the President that the historical dimension of this legislation is immense. Either it will go down in history as the most enlightened and equitable act of the United States government toward Native American, or it will be recorded as merely the last chapter.